Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest today is Kirill Sukhotsky, executive editor at Current Time. Kirill, it's great to have you on the show again.
Hello, Steve. It's good to be back.
All right, thanks. Okay, well, the Russian holidays are still going. Today is Christmas Eve in Russia, and I believe the first official working day of the year is January 9th. So it's a slow week. But one thing that's happening is that President Vladimir Putin is expected to meet on the 8th with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to formally open Turk Stream, a gas pipeline to Europe via Turkey. According to Reuters, Gazprom started shipping about 3 billion cubic meters of gas to Bulgaria via Turk Stream, on January 1st, and that's replacing a route that had passed through Ukraine and Romania. So along with Nord Stream 2 in the Baltic, this pipeline is part of the Russian effort to reduce its reliance on Ukraine for gas supplies, gas transit to Europe. Before the new year, Russia and Ukraine signed a kind of a last-minute five-year deal on transit to Europe through Ukraine. But the volume of gas that Russia ships that way is set to decline after 2020. So, Kirill, do you think Turk Stream is a big accomplishment for Russia?
Well, in a way it is, because it's a continuation of this gas and oil diplomacy that Moscow is such a big fan of. So they try to leverage their influence in Europe and elsewhere by either extending their gas and oil transit routes or halting them. And what you've just mentioned, Steve, about the Russian-Ukraine deal, which was not very well received by many in the Ukrainian public, because it's kind of a deal with Russia, but rightly so, those volumes of transit will decrease almost by 50% by the end of that five-year period. So they're trying to find new routes to Europe. They ran into problems with Nord Stream 2 because President Trump imposed sanctions on all the companies that were dealing or could deal with Nord Stream 2. Chancellor Merkel has slammed and said those imposed sanctions are extraterrestrial, you know, it can't happen. But now the question to Erdogan and to Putin will be, will the same fate befall Turk Stream 2? Because if there are sanctions against Nord Stream 2, potentially there could be sanctions against Turk Stream. And Erdogan already said that he would believe that this is crazy to impose sanctions, but that is a possibility. What Russia wants is political leverage, especially now, as, and we will probably touch it upon it later, when there is a rift between the United States and its European allies, now it's kind of it's power, because gas is not as much as literal power as political power, and oil the same thing. It's interesting that all these developments happen at the same time. Just a couple of days ago, Russia halted oil supplies to Belarus. The oil transit to Europe has not been interrupted so far because it flows via Belarus through Belarus, but oil supplies have been halted and no agreement has been reached yet. So that's something that Russia is very keen on doing, especially around New Year's Eve, as we all know. Turk Stream will be portrayed by both Russia and Turkey and state media in both countries as a huge success, because it pretty much shows the United States and Europe that, okay, we can deal with it ourselves. However, there may be a follow-up on the part of Washington if they decide to think whether sanctions are due.
All right, absolutely. Another thing is I think this comes at a time when relations between Turkey and Russia are a bit complicated again, they're always complicated, but they're sort of at odds over Libya. Putin and Erdogan are expected to also discuss Syria when they meet. And it seems certain now that their talks will include the situation more broadly in the Middle East and North Africa. Two big factors here. One is the killing by the United States of Qasem Soleimani, a senior Iranian military leader who was killed in Iraq. And the other is Libya, where Erdogan has criticized Russia for allegedly sending private military contractors to support General Khalifa Haftar against the struggling government of National Accord, which is supported, I believe, by the UN and by Turkey, certainly. Erdogan said on January 5th that he sent Turkish, quote, military elements to Libya. So that's kind of a point of contention between Russia and Turkey. They've had troubles in the past over the situation in Syria. Kirill, on this broader events, Russian officials have sharply criticized the United States over Soleimani's killing, but analysts say that in reality the Kremlin has some reason to welcome the move. Our colleague Todd Prince wrote an article issued over the weekend that gave some reasons why, with analysts saying that Putin could benefit if it drives a wedge between the U.S. and Europe. And also, Putin could use or try to use the situation to sort of increase his influence in the region and globally, trying to take on the mantle of a peacekeeper or a peacemaker or a mediator. So, Kirill, how do you think Russia really views the situation in the wake of Soleimani's killing?
It's interesting to see, because I think what they say in public and what they really think are two different things, as it often happens in the Kremlin. Todd's analysis and Todd's piece on our website is spot on, and I would urge everyone to read that, because it's even though the highest Russian officials, though not President Putin himself, they said that they're dismayed by this extrajudicial killing. But Soleimani, even though he was a big partner of Russia, especially in Syria and in Iran. And Soleimani traveled several times to Russia to meet with President Putin. We know that, though no photo or video of that of those meetings exist. Mm-hmm. But we know, because it was kind of semi-confirmed by both sides.
Right.
So he was pretty much a kingmaker of Iranian influence in the Middle East. And Russia was counting on Iran to counterweigh, the United States' influence in the Middle East. It's not clear very much whether Russia has a very clear or distinct strategy in Syria, or rather it's kind of a hodgepodge, everyday tactics, how we can further sow discord and chaos. And I think that's exactly why Soleimani's killing plays into Moscow's hands, because first of all, it does increase instability in the Middle East.
Right.
It plays into Russia's hand, because then Russia can be a kingmaker, and also Russia can exploit the differences. And also, the more discord and the more chaos that is injected into the Western alliance is one hell of a news for Russia. So they like that. Their whole strategy is not just about, some strategical alliances. They just want everybody to be in a state of chaos, so they can, pull in different strings and play, people and countries and other forces against each other. So it will be very interesting to see. It's kind of too early, and we don't know what Iran's response will be, if any, what will happen in Syria, because Soleimani was instrumental in keeping Iranian presence in Syria and was effectively a middleman between Moscow and Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president.
Right.
So what will happen now? Will Russia feel that they can expand their influence in Syria? What will now, because they had Soleimani as a counterpart, and also they knew the guy, and
right.
Now there will be a different, their successors, who Moscow may not know and may not trust as much as they trusted Soleimani over those decades.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very interesting. It's also interesting how Soleimani was always the stumbling block that prevented Moscow to reach any sort of agreement with Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel. And as Netanyahu is embroiled in his own domestic problems at home, he tried to reach out to Putin, and he met with him. And there are some issues that Russia and Israel want to explore and kind of deal on those issues.
Right.
But Soleimani in Iran was very much against it because then, hey, it's Syria. Will Soleimani's death be, will it enable Putin and Netanyahu to reach certain agreements that they weren't able to do before? That's interesting. And obviously one very important thing is that we see a discord, a very visible and palpable discord between Washington and Europe on Soleimani's death, because Europe has been practically silent and not very happy. And even Secretary Pompeo on Sunday said that we had support of all of our allies, but not our allies in Europe.
Right.
So it's Europe is not happy. And when Europe is not happy with the United States, Vladimir Putin is very happy. So that's interesting how he exploits that. And in that respect, it's very interesting how at the very last minute, Chancellor Merkel of Germany announced her surprise visit to Moscow this coming Saturday. It was not in the agenda, and it was probably prompted by the situation in the Middle East. The official readout announcing the visit says that they will discuss the Libyan crisis, as you, Steve, just mentioned. And if not for, now Soleimani overshadowed Libya completely. But,
right.
But Libya is a big concern. So Libya and Nord Stream 2. So those things that we've just, Steve, been talking about is gas and Libya and Soleimani's death and what it means for the Middle East and for Russia's influence there. It's all coming into one, big, question mark, or one big ball of a question mark. And Merkel is very tellingly traveling to Moscow, to Vladimir Putin's own territory, to speak to him about it. So I think this visit will be very important. It's not that they haven't met for some, she visited him in Sochi.
Right.
So they do meet, every year. But it's very interesting how she travels to Moscow in this while Moscow is still hibernating in this New Year's holidays, to talk to President Putin. So Putin must have enjoying this because he is becoming a kingmaker in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, that is very interesting. I actually hadn't heard of that visit. So thanks for being up on the news. And I guess, of course, Merkel can and usually is tough with Putin on some issues. But as a background, for the meeting, this kind of discord between the U.S. and Europe over Soleimani's killing is obviously something that the Kremlin is going to try to use in its favor. And the same probably goes for the situation in Libya, where, there's various it's pretty complex in terms of who's supporting whom and, probably lessens the whole situation, lessens the chance that that Russia will be severely criticized over its actions there.
So it's very interesting because also Merkel's visit will come certainly a couple of days later after his meeting with Erdogan. So it will be very now interesting to hear what Putin will say after the meeting with Erdogan, because he will probably use that as an opportunity to comment on what's happening in the Middle East currently.
Right.
And also after that, a couple of days later, he meets with Merkel, and they will speak as well. So I think suddenly, what seemed to be a very slow week is starting to shape up as slightly heavier than we thought.
Yes, absolutely. And it all comes ahead of Putin's State of the Nation address to Parliament and the people via TV, which is, next week. On January 15th. So we're going to hear, I guess, from Putin more about the Middle East in his talks with Erdogan and then with Merkel. And then he has the State of the Nation, which comes out quite quickly on the heels of his big news or press conference. So there is all of a sudden, as you say, quite a bit to watch. I guess let's wind it down for this week. Kirill, thank you very much for joining me.
It's always a pleasure.
All right. Tune in next week for another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia. And please take a look at my weekly article on events in Russia, which runs on Fridays. Thanks for listening.